unknown. I gotta show the world my heart's not made of stone. I have always tried to make my own bed, let love in, get out of my own head. Hope and pray someday that I will find you.
Been living on the edge of life, doing our best to try and survive, and the people in charge will know we've arrived, 'cause we're living on the edge of life. Taking to the streets a few victories and defeats. In the end, it's the people who decide. With just a few sticks and stones, after the banks have closed our homes, all we have left is our pride. We've been living on the edge of life, doing our best to try and survive, and the people in charge will know we've arrived, 'cause we're living on the edge of life. Carry our signs, stand in long lines. The 99% are here to stay. With the police on our tail, protecting too big to fail. It'll take more than a few cans of pepper spray. We've been living on the edge of life, doing our best to try and survive. And the people in charge know we've arrived, 'cause we're living on the edge of life. We will occupy your hearts and occupy your minds. We will rise up and finally have our say. The way things are now are gonna have to change somehow. It's up to us if we wanna have our day. We've been living on the edge of life, doing our best, try and survive. And the people in charge know we've arrived, 'cause we're living on the edge. Living on the edge. Yeah, we're living on the edge of life.
You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Welcome to another edition of Swoop's World, right here on the new Talk Story Radio Network. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happiness. Our number, if you want to give us a call tonight, is 562-912-3444. You can always email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Once again, if you want to give us a call, that number is 562-912-3444. Now just sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World on the new Talk Story Radio Network. And welcome to another edition of Swoop's World Primetime on a Thursday afternoon. How's it going, Peter?
It's going good.
Good. Our guest today is Michelle Danner. So we're waiting on Michelle to call in. She does a lot. She's an acting coach. She's the artistic director at the Edgemar Center. And that's where, we had Tana.
From last week.
Exactly. Tana Frederick on. And that's where she does doing her play, and she's done some plays there. So looking forward to talking to Michelle. But last night, great night.
It was.
We had Sofa City Sweetheart.
I couldn't believe how high his voice was.
His voice can get up there, man.
The first time I heard his song, I'm waiting for his voice to come in. And I realized, that's his voice.
I told him, because, you know, when he sent the songs ahead of time, and I listened to, three of them. Then he had sent four, so I listened to all four of them. But it wasn't the first or the second, probably the third or the fourth I heard a song, and I'm like, oh. So when he came in, I said, hey, who's singing on that song?
Yeah.
He goes, well, that's me. And I go, no, really.
That's amazing. Yeah, amazing range.
He's got a range, yeah.
Awesome, guitar player.
Yeah.
I was just sitting here, I was like watching him just go at the guitar. It was cool to watch. It's always fun to watch a really talented person.
Exactly.
Especially like right here next to me sort of thing. So that was cool. He's great. And then all the other instruments he can just play, but like he's accomplished.
And seriously, it reminds me when I was in college and I was DJing a little bit. Prince's first album came out, and we got the demo or whatever they send to the radio stations ahead of the actual release of the album. Written liner notes and stuff, and then he played every instrument on that album. I mean, keyboards, guitar, drums, every instrument on that album is just, you know, played by Prince.
Right.
You know. And that's kind of what Juan reminded me of last night.
Right, because he was also doing the... The sound tech, the engineering sound part tech. Of it too. So
I think he said he did everything except for the strings, but then he wrote the music for the strings. So
yeah,
what a talent!
That's impressive, man. Yeah. Especially with the little bit that I do know, and that I'm capable of doing on a guitar. It's really amazing when you see, you know, it's like you have just enough knowledge, enough like experience to look at somebody else and go, wow. You can appreciate is what
exactly.
I'm saying. Before I would have been like, that's pretty cool, but now I can really appreciate like how much work and time and training goes into being able to do stuff like that.
I always find it amazing when we have these guests on who talk about, you know, I was accomplished, like, yeah, he played trumpet all through high school. He didn't pick up a guitar or piano or any of that stuff until he was 17, 18 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just so, I don't know, it's either in you or not, I guess.
Definitely. Well, he did say that he was a bit lucky in that his dad actually made a living as a musician. So, you know, you get that support that a lot of times you don't get, you know, from family.
Yeah, and it sounds like friends. His whole family or no, family musicians. So that is, yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, no matter what line of work you go into, if you have a good support system.
People who understand.
It makes things a whole lot easier.
Yeah.
I might make the journey any easier, but the mental aspect of it is a lot easier.
Yeah.
Especially when you're, you know, creative, because everybody's like, get a real job.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely. And sometimes it seems like there's just so few outlets for that.
Yeah.
You know, the creative end of stuff. Right? And it seems that way. There are a lot, but sometimes it just seems that way that you just... And there's so many people that can play music.
Right.
You know, you can get lost just... As we know, we've seen some incredible musicians that are not on the radio.
Yeah.
And probably never will be on there, but it doesn't mean they aren't amazing
exactly,
musicians.
Exactly. And, you know, you see that.
That would
know,
be discouraging.
It's just like, you know, it's just kind of like when we talk about, you know, we talk about art in general a lot. You know, some of these art walks we've been at, I mean, you just row after row after row after row of talented people. And you're going, I just hope they get to my booth, you know?
Yeah.
And music's the same way. Like you said, we've seen some amazing musicians who probably some people will never hear of. And, you know, in my opinion, you could put them on stage with just about anybody else out there who you do know, you know, lots of occasions. So it's
sometimes it just seems like a little bit of luck is a whole
man.
Lot more than
it's who walked in the room that one day you're playing. The guy could have walked in the next day and caught the next act, and if they'd have been there the day before, you'd be the.
You seen the movie the Irish blues band.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. The
commitments,
yeah, exactly.
It's like they're that close, and can't keep it in. It's like you wonder how often that happens.
More so than we care to think about, I'm sure. Absolutely. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break and see if Michelle calls in. And in the meantime, we'll let everybody listen to a little bit of Sofa City Sweetheart. You listen to Swoop's World on the Talk Story Radio Network, and like we always tell you, you can find us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Send us an email at swoopsworld@gmail.com. And we'll be back after this. This one's called Andy and Me.
Alright, so listen up, there's something you should know.
I'm gonna put you on hold.
Forever's not a word that means I'll let her go. She makes me realize that life is more than living. You should know best of all what it's like. When she's singing, so tell me, what have you got against Andy and me? I'll tell you anything to make you start to see. Please let me know when I have changed your fickle mind. I'm quite aware that it might take a bit of time. I'll never leave this place. So Julie, what's so wrong with Andy and me? The dead steps in her feet make her and I complete. How could you possibly deny all this from me? So tell me what's so wrong with Andy and me.
Tell me, what do you got against Andy and me? I'll tell you every reason to make believe. Tell me, what do you got against Andy and me? I'll tell you everything I've got to make you believe. Andy and me, I've got a good thing.
You're listening to the Talk Story Radio Network.
Hey, there's a sharp hole in the wall, and you're listening to Swirl.
And welcome back to Swoop's World Primetime, and our guest today is Michelle Danner, the Artistic Director at the Edgemarth Center and Acting Coach to the Stars. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Great, how are you doing today?
Good.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you got started in this business and what you do on a regular basis there.
Well, I'm the Artistic Director of the Edgemarth Center for the Arts. And so in that capacity, I oversee the productions at Edgemarth. And once in a blue moon, I act myself when they ask me. And so this director and a wonderful actor asked me to do Ghosts by Ibsen. So I'm performing right now in that. We're having a run till mid-May. And we're having a wonderful time. It's a new adaptation, which is great when it comes to the classics, to have something that's new. And, you know, so it's an adaptation for this century. And that's one of the things that I do. And I'm a teacher as well. And I also direct, and I just finished a film called Hello, Herman.
Hang on just a second. Got a plane overhead. So you also directed a film?
Yes, I just completed a movie called Hello, Herman, written by John Buffalo Mailer, with starring an actor called Norman Reedus, who's currently on The Walking Dead on TV.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's a very controversial, provocative drama, and it's going to be released this fall, so I'm very excited about that. And, you know, so I'm a very artistic person, and enjoy doing it all.
Excellent. Now, did you start off as an actress? How did you get your start in the business?
I think I started with my genes. My dad was a producer, and we moved to Paris when I was 4 years old. He actually was the president of the William Morris Agency at the time and opened their very first offices in Paris.
Wow.
And so at a very young age, I started to take classes and was very artistic, and so performed in many plays in school and in conservatories. And then when I was 17, I moved back to the States, to New York, where I studied with Stella Adler and with Uta Hagen and with, you know, some wonderful teachers that inspired me, and did a lot of theater in New York before moving to Los Angeles in the 90s.
Well, now, how do you, I've talked to so many different actors and I've done a little myself. What for you, What do you prefer? You like being on stage or the film aspect? And what do you have a preference there?
Well, I certainly enjoy acting. If not, I wouldn't be doing it. And also it helps me with teaching and it helps me with directing because it really reminds me there's nothing like being in the trenches and doing it to remind yourself of certain aspects of it that, you know, you forget if you're not doing it.
Right.
And so I'm grateful for that, and it makes it enhances the other things that I do. So when I'm asked to do something, and if it's something that I can do and want to do, I'll say yes. But I really, it's hard to say. I so much enjoy being behind the camera and call action on a set. And, you know, I enjoy using my instruments in a, you know, in an emotional way, because that's fun too. And I love teaching because it's really about giving back and it's about contributing and it's about process.
Yeah.
And watching other people grow with their process. So that is something that's very fulfilling.
Yeah. You know, when I was reading your bio, it's you were on the ground floor with the Edgemar Center of the Arts. How did you get started with that?
Well, I walked in here. We were looking to build a theater, and I walked in this space that Frank Gehry designed the complex in the middle of the night, very illegally, with a flashlight. I will tell the story because, you know, there's some defining moments in one's life, and that was a defining moment in mine. Because I think it was around midnight, and I had the flashlight, and there was one huge open space, and I looked up, and I had this moment that, you know, I saw audiences, I heard applause, I saw the lights, I went, oh my God, we've got to build live art, live theaters in here, what is it going to take? And then I, you know, we had $0, I mean, we had nothing, and I found out other people were interested in doing it, and it wasn't available, but then the landlord called me a few months later, and she said, you know what, come, you know, and I was like, okay. I was in denial. I said, we'll buy drapes, we'll buy, you know, I'll sew curtains. I didn't even know how to sew at the time, so I don't even know what I was thinking. And I said, we'll put up flats. Turned out that there were permits, and, you know, it was a whole lot more intricate than that. I had to raise $1.3 million in capital campaign to build the plumbing, the electricity, the drywall. It was very, very intricate. But for some miracle, you know, when you look back on your life, you know there are things that are just meant to be. And the building of this theater was meant to be for me in 2000. In 2002, we cut the ribbon. So that's how it all started, is me really walking in, trespassing in the middle of the night, and finding this open space that I thought should have live arts in it.
Very good.
Well, that's cool. Swoopsville, my question. Has it been, it sounds like it has been, has it been, something like that is a massive undertaking, and has it been everything you hoped it would be? Has the challenges, would you do it again?
It's such a good question that you're asking me. Well, you know, you never regret what you do. I mean, I guess you could have regrets, but I don't, because, you know, you learn, even if it's something that didn't work out for you, you learn from all of it. So I have no regrets. I'm continuing to do it. We are there for a long time. We have a 20-year lease. I believe in the work that we're doing for the community, the outreach work that we're doing, which we have several programs that are about to start again with the kids and with the seniors. And, of course, I would do it again, and I would continue to do it. This is my life mission. This is what I love doing. This is my work, and I'll continue to do it until I can't do it anymore.
When you directed the movie recently, was this your first directing a film?
No, it was my second one. I directed a movie in 2006 called How to Go Out on a Date in Queens, with a great cast, friends of mine, Rob Estes, Kimberly Williams, Paisley now, Allison Eastwood, Jason Alexander, Ron Perlman, Issa Morales, and a slew of other wonderful actors. And it's a movie that was on ABC, was Sunday Night Movie of the Week on Memorial Day weekend a few years ago, and I enjoyed very much that experience. It was a romantic comedy. So this movie that I just finished is a complete shift from what I did back then, and I enjoyed doing it, and I have a few more movies in development that I will shoot in the coming years, and very excited about, you know, what the future holds, because I always say that I have a very fascinated both by film and by theater. Theater is vital, and we need to keep it alive. And film is one of the greatest classrooms in the world, so yeah. I love very much both.
You know, we had a guest on last week, Tana Frederick, and she just directed her first play, and I asked her, you know, when you're an actress or an actor, and then you and you go direct, do you have a new appreciation for what the other person does? And how has that been for you? You've been an actress, and you've done that, and you've worked, like I said, you worked on stage, you've been in film. But the change from being in front of the camera to being behind the camera, how does that work for you? Do you have a different appreciation for each craft?
Yes, I mean, I like very much directing because, you know, it's your vision, whether it's on stage. I think it's difficult to direct yourself on stage, and that's why kudos to Tana for having done such a great job. It's easier on film because you can go back to the monitor and you can watch the takes, and you can see if, you know, it's going the way you want it to go. But certainly in film, I very much want to have a vision for it. I mean, it's important. There's so many. The movies are a director's medium, and stage is the actor's medium.
Yeah. You know, that's I'm always amazed at the process, especially the directing process. And you know, because especially when you're talking film, I mean, even on stage, but when you're film, I mean, there's so much that goes into it. I mean, you know, the lighting and the sound and what you do in the editing room there too, with the background and everything else. It's a lot more intricate than I think most people really understand, because we take things for granted when we watch it on TV. But when you're done with the actual filming, you spend a lot of time in the editing room too, right?
Oh yes, and I love that. I love the process of editing. It's fascinating.
Well, and it looks like, in looking at your website, that classes are a big part of this whole thing, a big part of what you guys do. How do you go about doing that? I know Swoop here has done some acting. I'm not an actor, so that this is all kind of new stuff to me. Tell me what you guys do there. What do you try to achieve?
Well, we have a whole faculty, and we have programs, and, you know, actors can come and create their little mini conservatories. But we have individual classes that range from scene study to classes on the camera to classes on the big screen to script analysis to voice to even a wonderful class called Breaking into the Industry that gives a lot of information about the business side of acting. Then we have Brad Garrett that teaches comedy, casting directors. I mean, there's so many things that we have, going on at Edgemar. Our classes are the foundation of so much that happens there.
Cool. And it sounds like it's, you know, so much to offer in one location. You know, what kind of advice would you give to someone who's, you know, there's so many people out there. I mean, you could pick up, magazine or industry type thing. It's got a list of, come here, learn here, this type of thing, classes, instructors, whatever. What are some of the things a person should look for when deciding on, venturing into this business?
What should they look for before deciding if they should?
No, when you're going to select some place to go study, because like I said, you know, especially in the LA area, you know, in LA County, there's thousands and thousands of acting instructors or screenwriting workshops and things like that, and it can be overwhelming. Are there some key things that an individual should look for?
Well, don't you have to hook into the teacher? Does the teacher make sense to you? Do they have authenticity in them? I think it's very much, like choosing a therapist, somebody that you have a connection with.
Yeah.
And that's who you should study with. Sometimes, you'll study with someone. I've studied with so many people, but you'll study with someone that has really good information, but, you can't really connect with them, which is okay because you want the information. But I think when you're really working with your instrument, with a teacher, you want someone that really can see you and see through you and can help you in a nurturing way.
Right.
I mean, you know, I've encountered through my travels a lot of different teachers that, you know, have been rough and demeaning and brutal. And some of it has to do with their own frustration with having not, you know, had success in their careers. And I've always believed that acting needed to be taught in a more nurturing way. And that's what I try to do, but yet challenging, you know, nurturing and challenging, and pushing an actor to go past what's comfortable for them.
Right. As I read where you often you're actually coaching on set for a lot of different actors and stuff like that. You know, we got you doing the directing, we got you doing the acting. As being a coach, how do you take to that? And how was the first time that you were actually out there coaching someone that you felt that this is something I'm really pretty good at and I can do this?
Yes, I found that out a while back, a few years ago, that I was good at it because actors were booking jobs and thanking me and, you know, thanking. So I realized that I was being helpful. I was being a service when it came to that. And it was very gratifying. And the moment that I realized that, my acting took a back seat to coaching. And but I feel, you know, I felt like Uta Hagen towards the end of her life. That's why she started to act a lot, because she felt she hadn't done it enough in her prime time. So I never wanted to be that. That's why when they asked me to do Ghosts just now, I said yes. I want to make sure that I'm, you know, that I get to express myself on that front. But I love the fact that I was able to help out. That's incredibly rewarding.
Absolutely. Well, and you studied with some of the best, and so I have to imagine that you've taken a lot of the things that you learned and you're putting it out there in your own special way. But it's you're passing on some excellent thought processes and ideas as a way to achieve this craft.
Yes, I'm sorry. I lost the last part of your question.
No, I said I would imagine that because, you know, you like you said, you study with a lot of different people, but you did name two of the best is when it comes to teaching the craft of acting, and I have to imagine that, you know, you're passing on in your own way a lot of really powerful information to your students.
Yes, well, I'm a little encyclopedia. I have an amalgamation of everything that I've learned. And I have studied a lot, and I've read a lot. And more importantly than that, I'm passionate about it. I'm passionate about the work. I'm passionate about what it takes to create, a believable performance in a movie. I love it when you so believe the character because, you know, they've made those choices that make you feel that you're in very good hands.
Right.
And so, I'm lucky enough, but I think it all starts with loving it. And if you love it, you want to share it.
Right. You know, we've had...
And you have to share it. It's your responsibility to pass it down. You have to.
Absolutely. You know, we've talked a lot on our show about, you know, being creative and the arts in general. And how important it is to any society, and you what you've done here with the center is kind of created a home for people to kind of to learn and move forward with their craft. How important is it that obviously you had the passion for it. Do you see that this is still something that needs to be grown throughout any area, or are we just seeing pockets of places like this?
That there should be more theater?
Yes.
Well, yes. I mean, primarily Los Angeles is a movie and television town, but I think more and more, I find myself going to some productions, you know, in Hollywood and on this side of town in Santa Monica, which is where we're in. And you're surprised by the talent. And I think that theater has grown in L.A., and there's a lot of magic in theater in L.A. And I think it will continue to do that. I have a very good feeling that theater will keep growing in Los Angeles.
Yeah. I know that I see a lot of places pop up and different productions that show up. And I actually went to see a friend of mine at a place that was, I would have never thought there was a production company there, a little theater company there, but it was an amazing production, and it was just on some side street in downtown L.A. And they pop up, and like you said, there's so much talent out there that it's a good thing to see, and I'm just, I wish that it would grow more, you know, out here in our area.
And where is your area?
We're in Long Beach, we do have some really good theater companies here. And that being said, I'd like to see more of the smaller type things pop up in different areas, just in general in this area. But we do have quite a few good productions that go on here year round.
Well, that's great. That is really good.
You know, we need to take a break. Can you hold over through the break?
Sure.
Great. You listen to Swoops Road on the Talk Story Radio Network. Today is Prime Time, and our guest is Michelle Danner. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back after this.
My God, I never heard anything so sad. Michael, and now I hope you took a win and it all. Michael, the love of your life would have shown more class. She's not the one, you know this too shall pass.
Celestia and I play basketball. I drive the lane. I also drive my team, but I don't drink and drive. We at RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving, say hey, if you're going to drink, don't drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Check out my new time machine.
Does it work?
Hit the button.
Hey, it's Napoleon.
Oui. Check out the future.
Hey, you have a nice house. Why don't I?
You didn't save any money, buddy.
If only there was a way I could go back in time and fix that.
Yeah.
Save something for the future. Put away a few bucks. Feel like a million bucks. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Talk Story Radio.
This is Patty Matson,
and welcome back to Swoops Road on the Talk Story Radio Network. Our guest today is Michelle Danner. Peter, you had a question for Michelle?
Oh, yeah. So, going back to the film, and your latest here is Hello, Herman, and I was earlier looking through the page and the clip from there, and it looks like a really intense movie dealing with some really, you know, intense issues in America. And I'm wondering, first, when's the movie looks like it's done? Have you released it, and have you, what sort of response have you gotten? It looks really like a riveting movie.
I know, it's very intense. We've done 5 test screenings, both here in LA and in New York, and the audience was very moved by it. A lot of people were sobbing at the end. And, you know, I think it's a movie that gets you thinking and sparks a conversation. And, you know, it holds up a mirror as to how brutal, you know, things can be. So it is, although one of the themes in the movie, one of the storylines has to do with bullying, and especially cyberbullying and the consequences of that. The movie is really about the cruelty, you know, is what happens when people are violent and how desensitized we're on our way, how much more desensitized, you know, we're becoming. And some of it has to do with, you know, what's happening on the internet, of course. But people have been very moved by it, and I love that. I love the fact that it's a bit of a punch. We're currently looking for distribution. We've got some interest, so we'll see, you know, where we're going to land. But we're hoping for a fall release.
Cool. Wow. Good luck with that, because it looks like a movie that needs to be seen, needs to be out there.
Yes, people have come up to me and told me how brave I was for having made the movie. And I really wanted to make it because I thought this is so important to talk about this. It's so painful to me when, you know, people are squashed and ostracized and then bullied, of course. And I just think that, you know, more awareness, more conversation helps to not resolve the problem. It'll never be resolved. But, you know, for people to just be more conscious.
Yeah.
And to protect, you know, to protect our kids. I mean, that to me is the bottom line. We as a society have a responsibility to our children, and that's how it works. That's the cycle of life. And if we don't take care of our children, nobody will, and tragedies happen. So it's absolutely our responsibility to do that.
Absolutely. When you select a project, is it just something that moves you that you see, or do you go looking for certain types of projects? What is your process for that?
Yeah, it has to do with, you know, I think artists, directors, you know, writers act pick projects based on what's going on in their lives. What are the themes of their lives? Now, you know, this movie that I just did, I mean, I've never been bullied, and thankfully I don't live, you know, I'm a little cocooned in my life. But I'm very affected by violence, you know, that I observe other places. So it was on my radar to tell this story. Yeah. I have another movie that I want to do about the afterlife, which is something I'm interested in. I want to know if it's a curtain at the end or if there's something. I think you pick them based on what you're interested in your life. And, you know, I like comedies a lot. That's why it's very, you would never believe that I made this movie that I just made, because it's so intense. You know, I wouldn't even go see it. I'm just kidding. I would go see it. I would be happy that I saw it afterwards. But yeah. I tend to more gravitate more towards comedies.
You know, it's funny when you say that, because there's I think everybody kind of has something that they gravitate towards, but every once in a while there's something out there that you just have to see, and you once you're exposed to it, you know, I've been to movies that I just didn't want to go see. Period. I mean, the previews didn't interest me. From what I could tell about the storyline, didn't interest me, but I went because, you know, I was going with friends, and they said, this is what we're going to see, and you got to upload it. And walked away thinking that was one of the best movies I've ever seen, and I'm glad I went to go see it. So, you know, I think we do kind of box ourselves in sometimes, and everybody has preferences, but you still have to keep an open mind.
Exactly. Open mind is everything.
Exactly. Michelle, is there anything that you wanted to cover that we haven't yet covered today?
Well, I think we've talked about the movie, and we've talked about the classes, and come to see Ghosts. We're running till May 13th. at the Edgemoor Center for the Arts. We'd love for you to come. And if you want information on it, you can go on the website at edgemoorcenter.org, and I'm happy to get you tickets, of course. Come to the theater.
Thank you so much. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing, because it's really needed, and like Peter and I always talk about, it's always admirable to see people who have a vision and follow it through and see it become successful. So kudos to you.
Well, thank you very much, and I will continue to do it. Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Come back sometimes. You're always welcome on the show, and we look forward to seeing you, and hopefully we can make it down for one of your plays.
I hope so. Thank you very much. Thank you.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Michelle Danner, everyone, and you can check her out. You can go here on SuitsRoll.com, and there's a link to her site right on our page where it says Michelle Danner on Swiss World Primetime. So definitely check that out. If you get a chance, go down to the Edgemoor Center for the Arts and see what's happening there. And we have another good friend that's done things down there, and that's Tana Fredericks. And if you listen to her interview last week, you kind of see what she's up to. So it sounds like a really, really super cool place. With a lot going on.
Really versatile. That's really cool to have those types of things. It's great to have a theater. It's always good, but to have that aspect of teaching and training and being a center,
right,
is I think that is more, has more impact, is more effective, in the bigger sense,
right,
than just doing shows, which is laudable all by itself, but having that whole package seems like a great thing.
Well, it's cool because it sounds like there's the places there that you can actually put on some things, some of your own production type things.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was taking a lot of acting classes, you're around so many creative people that people want to get together and write and do something. And lots of times, a lot of places I was at, the stage was always being used for classes. So you really couldn't even put on a production just for one day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe sometimes, you could stick something in the afternoon or something and work out a deal with the acting instructor and try to get people down to come check it out. If no one else but your other fellow students to put on a complete production. It's more than just the scenes you do in class. So that's always, sounds like a really lot going on there and a lot of opportunity to really develop yourself.
Mm-hmm.
At the Edgemoor Center for the Arts. So definitely, if you get a chance, check that out. We're going to take another quick break and come back and talk about a little bit of news for the day and then wrap things up. You're listening to Swoops World on the Talk Story Radio Network. And let's listen to... Who do I want to do? How about Tom Hornig? He's a guest that will be coming in a few weeks. He's releasing a new CD. As a matter of fact, he has a CD release party Monday night at the Mint down in L.A. But this is Thomas Hornig, and this is called Gone.
hurts and the hurt that I had to endure. Now I finally feel I'm at home. Now that I've been living on the edge for much long, been wishing for
this is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, Rad, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
My name is Ruth Roosey, and this is how I live United. I read to children as part of United Way's education program. It helps them create links between language and literacy and prepares them for a better academic future. I figure I have the time and they have the need. My name is Ruth Roosey. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Talk Story Radio.
Hello, this is Normandy Wilson, and you're listening to Snoop's World.
I don't know what else you got going on, but no one pays for sure. You got me thinking about what...
And welcome back to Snoop's World on the Talk Story Radio Network, and we were happy to have as our guest Michelle Danner. I want to thank Michelle for joining us today. I also want to tell you about a couple good friends of Snoop's World, SoCal Mobile Detailing Spa. Goes after the dirt, cars, trucks, SUVs, and boats. Brandon Williams is the owner, proprietor, operator, you name it. He's the man, and he will come to you. No matter where you're located, he will come to you and detail your car. Exterior wash, wash and wax, full detail, you name it. Best prices in town. Give him a call, 562-856-8121 or 310-997-5660. Or you can send him an email at so.calmds@gmail.com. Also, Powerhouse Fitness, our good friend Jack Nunn, who will be joining us again here in a few weeks. But Jack Nunn, if you want to go get in shape, stay in shape, be trained by some outstanding and superior athletes, no matter what your goals are, you can achieve them all at Powerhouse Fitness. Indoor rowing, Zumba, boot camp, spin classes, personal training, and much, much more. Two locations, 5750 Boathouse Lane, 1347 Loma Street, both in Long Beach. Website powerhousefit.com or give them a call, 562-688-1716. With both Jack and Brandon, let them know that Swoops World sent you. I know with Powerhouse Fitness, your first week is for free. And he's also running a special on Fridays called $5 Zumba. So you can go take a Zumba class for $5. Go to the website, click on the thing there, and it'll tell you how to do that. What's happening, man? Got any... odd or unusual news stories for us?
You know, a couple things here. This one was, you know how much I love golf. Big golf fan.
Easy now.
And anyhow, but this was worth, even though normally I would just completely avoid a golf-related thing, this was a good one because I also happen to have a dog that could possibly happen. And what happened was, is this guy, he won four tickets.
I heard about that.
For the Masters.
Yeah.
And he lives in Seattle. He was going to go. And he went to work, came home. His four tickets were gone. And all that was left was, like, apparently they were bound by a string or something like that. And that's all that was left. And so he realized that the dog had eaten his four tickets. They don't tell you how much those cost, but I'm sure they weren't cheap. And
he won them.
He'd want them.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So, you know, which is even harder, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I guess he wasn't out money. I don't know. Either way, though, this guy was planning a trip, and he was going to go, and he had everything planned. So, What he did was, is he threw some hydrogen peroxide, which here in the article they say that's safe for animals to ingest. But then his dog puked. So it makes me wonder how safe it is.
Well, that's what it, that's what it makes him do.
Right. So anyhow, puked, and this guy went through the puke, pieced back the picture, the tickets, took a picture, and asked if they would give him new tickets. Which, amazingly enough, they actually did.
They
So they actually gave him 4 new tickets. Now I'm just thinking, with my love of golf, I would have been like looking at that going, wow, that's awesome. I just got out of 10 hours of sheer boredom. But I guess if that's your thing, there's no way in hell, though, I would go through my dog's puke. I would just be like, yeah, done. I'm out of here.
But I heard the story. Now, it did cost him some money because I think he won them based on raffle or auction. So he spent... He spent some money, and then he had already booked a trip. He had already booked hotels.
You still go do the trip, is what I'm thinking. Yeah. Just skip the fucking boring golf part. It'd be a more interesting trip.
Some of us actually like watching him hit the little ball around.
The only exciting part, and this was great actually, because I don't watch anything, but I was at on Sunday. My wife's brother-in-law was watching, and the only cool or exciting part is when somebody in the stands gets hit. I love that. And this guy got clocked on the side. He got clocked, and he just drops like he just cold, and you don't even see it because it was kind of a close up. And all you do is you just see him like fall over. And I'm like, yes.
Let me tell you though, the pressure. You know, I played in a celebrity golf tournament once. I wasn't a celebrity. I mean, I got to play with the celebrity, but there's. I never played at a golf course where there'd been tons of people sitting around alongside the course, right? And I don't hit the ball that straight. And, you know, but I'm playing pretty darn good because nerves, you know, everything kicks in when you get that kind of pressure on you. And there's all these people sitting around the green. Now, usually when I hit towards the green, I hit towards the green, right? If it lands on the green, good. If it's close to the green, I'm happy. But I remember the first time, because our group has followed like somebody like Jack Nicholson or whatever, right? Or he was right behind us or something like that. Bottom line, there were like hundreds and hundreds of people sitting around this green, and I'm thinking, I got to hit this ball up towards those people. I'm going to hit somebody for sure. But I didn't. It landed on the green. I felt all proud, like I was a badass. Yeah. Then I go and missed a putt. But
I think it'd be more fun to hit the ball.
Well...
You can do it. Hey,
get off the way.
That's it, man.
It was a little nerve-wracking for me, but those guys, you do get smacked, though. I see people just get hit all the time. And then with all the rules and stuff, that's something that, you know, if they're not really racked up. I saw one where the ball landed kind of in a guy's collar.
Mm-hmm.
And the what do you call them? The referees, whatever those guys are, the judge. Or whatever. They're stand there. And then, you know, you got to wait for the golfer to walk all the way up there.
Yeah.
And then there's rules and the placement and all this kind of stuff and, you know, what you can do and how much you can move the ball. I said, it was funny they made him had to whack it out of that was sure.
See, again, that would make golf way more exciting. That would make golf worth watching. I like that scene in Sideways. If that's what golf is like. I'd play some golf. That would be fun, man. You get to go crazy and attack people.
If that was a wicked trip, I'd take a whole lot more wicked trips. Oh, I love when he runs the guys. You're gonna wreck your car, man. He's gonna go along with this busted nose I got.
Yeah.
So I'm looking here. This is called Awful Pickup Lines That Actually Worked. It's put on Yahoo.com, Match.com, or something. Some of these are they're awful, but there's some amusement to some of them. And this one here says, this guy who was so not my style came over to me and my friends and asked, do you happen to know how much a polar bear weighs? We said no and kept walking. And then he said, well, it's enough to break the ice. Hi, I'm Brian. He says, we all cracked up and kept talking to him. And then this guy here, there's a... I'll give you two more. This girl says, I was shooting pool with friends, and some guy offered us a friendly challenge. Midway through the game, one of them looked at me and said, do you remember Crayola crayons? And I said, well, they used to have a color called Blizzard Blue. It was my favorite color, and your eyes are actually Blizzard Blue. Mm. She goes, I thought it was so cute, he had me right there.
Uh-huh.
Erica, 21.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the last one I'm going to give you, because there's a whole bunch of them. It says, the overly confident come on. Because I was at an office party when a guest of a coworker introduced himself to me and said, blueberries or strawberries? Confused, I asked what he meant, and he replied, I just want to know what kind of pancakes to make you in the morning.
Oh, Jesus.
He said it with such a straight face and was like a scene from a funny movie. She goes, I didn't eat breakfast with him, but I did give him my number. Jan, 33, Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Pickens may be slim in Cleveland.
Yeah, man. I need to take a trip.
Did you have something else there, bro?
Yeah, so in Japan, you know, I don't know, maybe not everybody knows this, but there's a certain kind of blowfish that, well, blowfish is poisonous, right?
Yeah.
And there's a certain kind that is eaten as sushi, and it has to be prepared in just such a way, because otherwise the poison will kill you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's doesn't, I mean, I don't mind edgy food, but I'm not going to take that chance. So, you know, basically for all these years, it's always been you have to get, and it's expensive. It's like $120 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And so now there's new laws, and yet in order to do this, you have to have these. You have to have a permit. You have to have passed the test,
right,
and shown that you know what the hell you're doing. And it says here, this is being reported from Reuters. There's that new law coming into effect from October are opening the lucrative trade to restaurants without a license, making anybody,
oh my gosh,
able to, you know, go ahead and prepare this stuff. I'm not, you know, everybody talks about deregulation and making business, you know, more friendly government. I think this is probably a regulation we should this is Japan, so we're not there. But I'm just thinking this is one of those regulations that maybe Tokyo needs to keep in effect.
They need to keep it in effect. And they need to have a little warning that says, you know how it says, you'll see something that says, items here are prepared on the same platform peanuts are used, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I want to know if you're preparing my food the same place as blowfish preparation is taking place.
So the poison is known as tetrodotoxin. And it's found in parts of the blowfish, including the liver, heart, intestines, and eyes. And it's so intense that a tiny amount will kill. Every year there are reports of people dying after preparing blowfish at home. Yeah. So why not just, you know, roll back all the regulations, let anybody serve
it? Just leave the freaking blowfish alone.
How's that? Shit, man. So the blowfish is known as fugu. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly or not. And it's usually, you know, like done in tempura or raw, thin enough to see through, you know, and served on, you know, like any kind of sushi with sake and all that. So certain places cost 10,000 yen a person to eat, and
wow,
that works out to, I guess, here in the article it says it's like $120 minimum. And the apprentice blowfish chefs, and this has got a lot of the chefs pissed off, right? These guys who've gone through the study,
right?
Because here's the deal. Apprentice blowfish chefs must train with a veteran for a minimum of 2 years before they can even take the written and practical exams. And the exam fee costs 17,900 yen, which I don't know what that translates to. Point is, though, you got some pissed off people who've already done the
done the
deal,
the stuff. Exactly.
Put in the time, and now anybody can do it. So anyhow, all I'm saying is, if you go to Tokyo, don't order the fugu. That's my suggestion. I'm not an expert, but that just seems like common sense right there.
I'm with you on that. How much you say it costs? 17,000?
They said 17,900 yen is what the exam fee runs.
$2,200 today's rate.
That's not cheap then, obviously. So, in 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's an investment. I don't know. Sounds like one of those instances where a little government regulation probably a good thing.
Probably not.
Just in the general public interest, I think.
I'm with you on that, man. And,
you got to be a nut to eat a food that can kill you.
Well, you know,
and that doesn't sound like a quick, painless death. That sounds like stop your heart, you're gagging, dead.
And you know you're dying.
And you know you're dying.
There's times this shit happens to you. You go, oh, my God, I'm going to die. But you gotta hope.
We say we shouldn't have gone out for sushi tonight. We should, told you should have gone to that teriyaki place.
Mickey D's is looking a whole lot better.
Yeah. It'll kill you. But over a longer
period of time. Yeah. Exactly.
I don't want to die that quickly.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's good for us tonight, man. Or today, actually. Swoops Row Prime Time. Next week, Swoops Row Late Night, the Heart Pills will be joining us. And on primetime, Rob Saul will be calling into the studio. So want to once again thank our guest, Michelle Danner, for joining us today. And until then, everybody have a great and safe weekend. Good day, all.
Have a good one.
The views and opinions expressed by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Story Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.